You're listening to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com today.
Welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solly. I'm the senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolly. Joining us today via the Chevy Trucks Hotline, ChicagoFootball.com writer and USA Today's NFC North correspondent, Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how you doing?
I am outstanding, John. How are you?
Busy. It's that time of year like we've been talking about, but I'm excited. Let's talk some fantasy football. But first, we got a couple of housekeeping items. As always, our podcast is broken up into two parts, season long and DFS. And we've got a couple of treats for you. On this specific podcast, we've got an interview with Sports Illustrated fantasy football writer Michael Beller. He's outstanding. Can't wait for you to hear that. And later this week, we'll have an interview with Yahoo's Andy Behrens. Really looking forward to that. We're going to talk a little bit about Yahoo's DFS Daily Fantasy Sports content and their new program. So let's get into some season-long news and notes. Arthur, it's another podcast, and we're talking about Kevin White. I can't believe we have this much Kevin White stuff for a guy that hasn't even played. But we now actually have some clarity. He's going to have surgery on his shin. He'll miss at least the next 6 weeks. Probably out for the season. I have no idea what to believe when it comes to Ryan Pace and John Fox and what they have to say. But Alshon Jeffrey is also out. So how much do you bump Eddie Royal in season-long drafts going forward?
Yeah, Eddie Royal is an interesting guy at this point. Frankly, he was an interesting guy before the injuries hit on Jeffrey and White. He's been having a terrific camp, and it's clear that the previous rapport he established with Jay Cutler in Denver back when Royal was a rookie has reappeared pretty quickly. So it's pretty promising for his outlook. I think the thing with Eddie Royal is that there's a clear ceiling. His rookie numbers, outstanding, almost 90, he had over 90 balls and 5 touchdowns and nearly 1,000 receiving yards. And those are really respectable numbers. Those would place you somewhere just outside the top 20 in fantasy scoring last year. So I think there is some value. I think there is better value than what you're seeing right now with him coming off the board like 60th among wide receivers. But you just have to know that there's a ceiling. I think the touchdown totals of the past couple years, I think he had 8 and 7 over the past two seasons, probably aren't going to be replicated because you're joining an offense, assuming there's a healthy Alshon Jeffrey, assuming there's a healthy Martellus Bennett, and obviously Matt Forte. I believe there's some more scoring options for Cutler to look at than Eddie Royal. But if you're in a PPR league or if you're really dependent on some prolific catch totals, I think Eddie Royal is going to have a chance to get near that 80-90 ball plateau that he reached in that rookie season.
Yeah, I was just on Yahoo. It's Monday morning. I was just checking out their ADP. Right now, he's going in the 14th round. Now, that obviously averages all of their drafts. That's way too late. I'm comfortable maybe 9th or 10th round, maybe even earlier. What about you?
I think you're right on the money. I mean, again, if he's going to be just outside the top 20 in receiving, I think even in the in the 9th round, you're probably doing pretty darn well. That's going to be a solid wide receiver two for you. So, yeah, I think you're good. Definitely bump him up a few rounds and be comfortable because he's a guy that provides comfort for the offense. He's a guy you know what you're going to get in, and he's looked very good. I know Adam Gase is extremely high on Eddie Royal, so an interesting guy, and I think a lot of people are still kind of thinking, brand names. Kevin White, we'll see if he plays this season. I'm not ready to say he won't, but it doesn't look real good. But Royal's still not exactly the brand name, obviously, of a White or, of course, of an Alshon Jeffrey, and could be a nice little sleeper or a nice little value pick for you as the draft roll around.
And you've been out in Bourbonnais. You mentioned that he's looked great. Can you go a little bit further? How great has he looked working with Jay Cutler?
Well, I would say outside of Alshon Jeffrey, he's been the most impressive offensive player in Bourbonnais. It's just, like I said, those routes seem to have quickly kind of clicked for the two of them. He's not going to be your explosive yards after the catch guy. He's not a Randall Cobb. He's not a Victor Cruz, one of these really, really dynamic slot receivers. But he is a guy who can play both inside and outside. I think that might help for them early, given some of the other options or lack thereof in that passing game. And he does still have the ability to bring in a long one. He had the highlight catch of the day on the final day in Bourbonnais, toasted Tracy Porter down the right sideline and went up and got it. So he has actually shown a little bit of that too. He's not a big guy, obviously, but he's shown some ball skills and an ability to high point. So an intriguing guy, and like I said, the chemistry is there, the versatility has been there. be very comfortable kind of having Eddie Royal on your radar. I'll throw one more guy in just because after the last two training camps, I think he at least deserves mention. It's more of a wait and see, but given the Bears wide receiver situation, he's someone you should also kind of have your finger on the pulse of, and that's Marquise Wilson, former seventh rounder of the previous regime. He has been a star in camp each of the past two camps. Last year, he fractured that clavicle. It cost him his whole second season. Now Wilson suddenly looks like not only a starter, but a guy they're going to have to depend on the outside. And when you're on the outside opposite of Alshon Jeffrey, you're going to have some opportunities. Marquise Wilson is another big kid at 6'3". He's a guy who's shown the ability to stretch the field in camp. Now he just has to translate it to games. But the talent is there and the opportunity is there. So Marquise Wilson is a name I would also be familiar with.
I'm going to throw out a couple of names to you, Arthur. And which guy would you take first? Eddie Royal or Eric Decker?
Right now, I'm thinking Eddie Royal because I like the quarterback situation better. One, all due respect to Ryan Fitzpatrick and whatever they got going there in that offense with Chan Gailey, I think they're going to run the football a lot. I think it's going to be the same deal with the Bears, but a little bit more of a longer established track record with Eddie Royal. I guess we still don't know exactly what Eric Decker can do in that offense with that quarterback. There's been a lot of changes this offseason.
I would agree with that.
And I like Decker too.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Be clear, he's a good receiver, and I think he should have a nice year now in that second year in the offense. But again, there's just been a lot of turnover.
Eddie Royal or Golden Tate?
I'd probably have to lean towards Golden Tate. What he did last year, obviously eye-opening, and has really picked up where he left off this preseason, from what I understand. I think that offense, if there's a healthy Eric Ebron, Kelvin Johnson is turning heads once again. I think Golden Tate, I'd have to give a slight nod there.
Last one, we'll stick with the Jets here. Eddie Royal or Brandon Marshall?
Ooh, okay, that's... an interesting one as well. I'm not really very excited about that Jets offense, particularly in light of the Geno Smith news last week. So, nonetheless, I guess Brandon Marshall is, a top five receiver before this year, and he's going to be the guy in that offense. So I'd still lean Brandon Marshall just because, again, he's the guy, and clearly Alshon will be the guy in the Bears offense. But I don't think you can go wrong with frankly, any of these guys. A lot of top flight receivers we're talking about.
All right, move on to some rookie quarterbacks. A couple of guys made their debuts this past weekend. Jameis Winston for the Bucs went 9 of 19 with 131 yards and an interception. He did lead a TD drive. Marcus Mariota with the Titans, 7 of 8 for 94 yards with the TD and his first interception throughout all of training camp. Looked pretty comfortable. His wide receivers looked a little bit shaky. Arthur, what's your analysis of these rookie QBs after the first week?
Not a lot of surprise. It's their first time ever stepping in between the white lines and facing an opposition, other than their own. So I think, I'm excited about both of these guys long term. But if anyone has it in their minds that this is going to be a Cam Newton or an Andrew Luck type of fantasy opportunity, then I think they need to kind of reassess the way they're viewing this.
That's a very polite way of putting that.
right. Yeah. Jameis Winston is considered the more pro-ready quarterback. That's what my belief is. But you have to look at it. Some of the other circumstances. He did go up against a terrific Vikings defense, and like you said, he was a little shaky. A couple turnovers early. He's going to be leaning on a pair of rookie offensive tackles to kind of further sort of cloud his learning curve a little bit. Now I do love the weapons he has on the outside there, and Mike Evans, and obviously Vincent Jackson. So I'd give him the edge in terms of weapons and pro-readiness with Marcus Mariota. He should have a better offensive line. The Titans have really invested heavily to hopefully protect him well, but you just wonder, as we were talking about off-air, who exactly he's going to get the football to. There's some excitement about Kendall Wright, but aside from that, I don't think expecting anything from Doriel Green Beckham or expecting a really productive rookie season early is the way to go, and just not a lot else there. And beyond that, Marcus Mariota, of course, has never been in the NFL offense, and Ken Wisenhunt appears to be showing part of what Mariota can do with the option, the option read stuff, but also a lot of under-setter stuff, which I'm sure is going to be a transition for Mariota.
Yeah, these guys are Dynasty League stashes, and that's about it for me, because there's plenty of value available at quarterback. And move on to the Eagles quarterbacks. Sam Bradford didn't really play against the Colts. Mark Sanchez, 2 of 7 for 52 yards, looked absolutely awful, overthrew Jordan Matthews. Nelson Aguilar, absolutely saved him. People are going to see that Sanchez threw a touchdown pass. That was all Nelson Agholor. The ball was over his head. There was a lot of yards after catch. Right now, Sam Bradford is going in the 13th round. I'm comfortable taking him in the 10th or 11th, even with the injury history, just because I think he's that far ahead of Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, and I think the Eagles certainly believe that, too. That was part of the reason, you know, obviously coming off back-to-back ACLs, you don't want to rush him back in meaningless preseason games. But I think they were further comfortable in that decision process because of how good he's looked in camp. Bradford, they have a lot invested in. He is the far more talented quarterback between the two, and he's exciting. You know, Chip Kelly is going to add a lot to his fantasy luster. It's not going to help the lack of durability that he's brought to the table, but a healthy full 16-game season from Sam Bradford, and I'm not, you know, I don't think it's at all a stretch to say that he can enter the QB1 and maybe even the, you know, I don't want to say top five, but the top half, maybe top seven, top eight of the QB1 range. And anyone who's read our Chicago Football Magazine, a quick shameless plug here, knows how I feel about Nelson Agholor, or if you follow me on Twitter. So that's a guy I will definitely be targeting as well. I think he's a man-child and an instant contributor to that offense.
Agree. And yeah, I agree with you that Bradford could end up as a top 10 quarterback, especially in that offense.
He is covering yourself, obviously. You have to, you have to know about the injuries. You have to have a really, really good backup option, or maybe you're viewing it as you have a little more volatile starting option, and then you go with Sam Bradford as kind of your handcuff there. But there's some intrigue. You just have to be careful in the way you play it, I believe.
I agree. Our last season-long note here, a guy that we've talked about before on the podcast, but he made his debut, Amir Abdullah from the Detroit Lions, the outstanding rookie running back out of Nebraska. 67 yards on 7 carries, looked explosive. I think he's a 5th-round pick right now. Do you agree or disagree?
I think that might be a little too rich for my blood, just because I think that, you know, Joik Bell isn't going to suddenly disappear from this equation. I think we talked about a little bit on this show. Bell is in a contract year. They love him. They have every reason to kind of run him into the ground and see where things go. I don't think Abdullah is going to be the goal line back. Even if it wasn't Joik Bell, it might be someone like a George Wynn who could come in and soak up a few of those opportunities right near the goal line. So I really like Joik Bell. And just to preface this, no, I don't like every rookie. I know now we've gone back to back, and I'll have a little man crush on Abdullah too. But everyone knows how I felt about him for a while too. So very exciting when you have Todd Bowles, the coach of the Jets, invoking Barry Sanders' name in the same conversation with Amir Abdullah. Obviously, you're doing something right. He had an outstanding debut, and he's going to bring some explosiveness to that offense. But again, I'm just not quite sure. You know, I think he's their long-term starter, but I don't think that's going to happen this year. So I have to. I don't predict 1,500 yards or anything crazy like that. And he's not going to give you RB1 or even good RB2 returns. But he's an exciting player, and his time is going to come sooner than later. He would be a great RB3.
I don't disagree with you that they're going to try and run Joik Bell into the ground, but I think what that means for Joik Bell is he's probably hurt. And I'm not going to go predict injuries. I don't want to do that. That's pretty crass. But I don't. If you're going to say we're going to run Joik Bell into the ground, I don't have much faith that's going to last for 16 games. So I'm probably higher on Abdullah because of that.
It's a great point, and again, he brings an interesting element. So regardless of whether Joik's there, regardless of whether Theo Riddick's there, who did get the start for the first preseason game, and is another guy who can do a lot of things, no one has the home run ability of Abdullah. We saw a little bit of it on that crazy juke in the backfield on a really good linebacker, I might add, in DeMario Davis, and then just shot up field like a cannon for whatever it was, 46 yards or something. So really exciting kid, someone to definitely keep an eye on, but I just think you have to make sure you got some other really good options ahead of him, probably.
All right. Here is our interview with Sports Illustrated fantasy writer Michael Beller. Hope you enjoy. All right. And joining us on the Chevy Trucks Hotline as our guest, he is Sports Illustrated lead fantasy sports writer, 120 Sports Fantasy Analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at MBeller. Michael Beller, welcome to the Chicago Football Podcast.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I want to talk about a piece you wrote on Monday on SI, why I'm avoiding DeMarco Murray, Andre Ellington, and others at their draft prices. Let's start with DeMarco Murray. Why are you avoiding him at his current ADP?
Oh, ADP for DeMarco Murray right now is checking in right at the end of the first, early second round. So somewhere in 12-team league, we're talking somewhere between 12 and 14 on average. And that's just a little bit too much for me when you look at all the things that are going into DeMarco Murray's 2015 season. First of all, you include Dallas's two playoff games last year, and DeMarco Murray had 497 touches in 2014. That's the fourth most in NFL history. Emmitt Smith had a couple seasons, actually, where he had more than that. And then Jamal Anderson in 98 with the Falcons, when they went to the Super Bowl, he also had more than that season. Jamal Anderson in 99, we all know about the torn ACL. Emmitt Smith, sort of a freak of nature. You can't really equate what he did to anyone else. But even Emmitt Smith took a step back production-wise each of those next two seasons after he racked up 500-plus touches. So it's a heavy workload for anyone, and then especially someone who has had injury problems, injury questions, going back to his college days at Oklahoma, like DeMarco Murray. Last year, the first time he played 16 games in his NFL career. So you put those things together, and it really starts to get dangerous for taking someone as early in the draft as you have to take DeMarco Murray. The Eagles did not give Ryan Matthews $5 million in guaranteed money just so he could get the same 50 carries that Joseph Randall had in Dallas last year. So Murray is going to be sharing the backfield more in Philadelphia than he did in Dallas. And there's no more Tony Romo. There's no Dez Bryant. Jordan Matthews is a good, strong young receiver, only getting better. But obviously he's nowhere near the Dez Bryant level. And then whether it's Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez, obviously not the same sort of consistency or stability that Tony Romo provides at the quarterback position. So there's going to be a lot more of a focus, I think, on Murray than there was last year in Dallas. The one thing that he still has, everyone wants to talk about that Dallas line. Philadelphia's offensive line, especially when it comes to run blocking, just as good, if not better. So I don't knock Murray for that at all, but still, there's just too many red flags here for me to take him over, let's say, Demaryius Thomas, Odell Beckham, Jordy Nelson, Jeremy Hill is in the exact same range. So I would rather have any of those guys. They just all feel safer to me at that stage of the draft than DeMarco Murray does this season.
All right, and another guy on your list, Arizona Cardinals running back Andre Ellington. Does the fact that Arizona went out and signed Chris Johnson, should those be setting off alarms in fantasy players' heads?
Chris Johnson signing doesn't worry me too much. I think that has a little bit more to do with David Johnson, the rookie out of Northern Iowa, being a little banged up right now than it does a lack of faith in Andre Ellington. But I think what it does signal to us a little bit is that Cardinals saw what happened with Ellington last year, and they're going to want to keep someone else, be it David Johnson, be it Chris Johnson, someone else significantly involved in the running game to keep Ellington healthy and on the field. I think that really... he's an interesting guy because people want to talk about him sort of in binary terms. He either can be a workhorse back or he can't be. And if he can't be, he's not worth anything. And I wouldn't go that far, but I think that you can't have the confidence in him that he's going to be a 200 plus carry back. The Cardinals wanted that for him last year. He was banged up, missed four games. And when he was on the field, largely ineffective as a runner, just 3.3 yards per carry. I think he is going to be more of a specialist change of pace guy who pushes up toward maybe 200 touches between carries and receptions, but is not someone that can really be counted on as a week in, week out fantasy starter. And that's really where you have to do with him. He's going off the board still pretty much as if he fulfilled those hopes that the Cardinals had for him last season. And I just think that, again, the opportunity cost far too high when you consider some of the other running backs and receivers that are going off the board in the same neighborhood as Ellington. If I could get him 15 picks or so later than his average draft day price, then I'm in. But it's probably not going to happen. If I have to take him where I have to take him, I'm going to let someone else go ahead and make that plunge.
Okay, I am overvaluing Joseph Randall, the Dallas Cowboys. I'm all over him. Talk me down from Joseph Randall a little bit.
Well, the logic behind Joseph Randall's rising ADP and behind his fantasy darling status this season makes complete sense. I mean, we saw it with DeMarco Murray last year on that Dallas team. Just everything I just talked about, that great line and Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. I mean, that all makes sense for sure, but I don't see the Cowboys pounding him and giving him the ball as frequently as they did DeMarco Murray last season. If we just use DeMarco Murray's 392, we'll round up and call it 400 carries, sort of as a baseline. I don't think it's going to be a 400-0 or, like I said, 390-50 split like it was with Murray and Joseph Randall last year. I think you're looking at something more like 250 for Randall and 150 for Darren McFadden. So I do think that Joseph Randle's a great player. He's explosive. I think he will be productive on a per-touch basis, but I think a lot of people are assuming he's going to get the same 300-plus that DeMarco Murray got and drafting him at that level, rather than thinking he is going to be the number one guy, but it's going to be more of a 70-30 split, maybe a 65-35 split, than the 95-5 split that Murray enjoyed during his last year with the Cowboys. So another guy who I think is a good player, no doubt about it. I just think he might be a little bit of a value bust, maybe just a touch overvalued in your average fantasy draft. But I do think that he is well positioned to have a nice year. Can definitely be a running back too for fantasy owners in 2015.
All right, I think I'm moving Randle down around in my board. Then.
Yeah, just a little bit. just a little bit. I think he's going to be very productive on a per touch basis.
What training camp battles are you most interested in at this point?
Most of them have to do with the running back position, of course. One that I was really hoping to keep an eye on that we haven't got to see because of injury so much was Tevin Coleman versus Devontae Freeman down in Atlanta, but both of them have been injured. I still think that it's going to be those two guys. They've opened the door for Anton Smith a little bit with their injuries. It's going to be between Coleman and Freeman, and the reason why this one is most interesting to me is because the Atlanta Falcons have been looking for a running back ever since that one good year that Michael Turner gave them. They really need some help in the running game, and we know what they're going to do passing-wise. I mean, you know, Matt Ryan, not necessarily the sexiest pick in any fantasy draft, but last 3 years he sat between 45 and 4,700 yards, 26 and 32 touchdowns. There's no reason to expect that he's going to come off that. And you remember the middle year of these 3 years we're talking about was basically no Julio Jones. Julio Jones has played 5 games that season before suffering that broken bone in his foot that cost him the last 11. So Matt Ryan is going to be somewhere in that neighborhood. And if one of these running backs could just stay upright, prove himself to be a worth, you know, like we're talking about with Joseph Randle, worth 70% of the touches and kind of make it not a 50-50 split, but really take the lead, that could turn into a very lucrative spot for either of them, whether it be Coleman or be it Devontae Freeman. So I'm going to be paying very close attention to this. Both of them are starting to get back on the field. Third preseason game down in Atlanta. You are going to want to see the way that this new coaching staff mixes Coleman and Freeman. And then you can really appropriately price these two guys heading into your draft. Another one that I've got my eye on, the lesser of these running back battles, called Coleman and Freeman, the running back battle on steroids. This one would be down in Tennessee, David Cobb, Bishop Sankey. What's going to happen with those two guys? I think that one ends up being a little bit closer to a 50-50 split. And then on top of that, the reason why that one's not quite as interesting, at least for fantasy purposes, just not as much value in the overall backfield or offense in Tennessee as there is in Atlanta. I think Marcus Mariota will bring a degree of stability that they didn't have last year with Jake Locker, Zach Mettenberger, or Charlie Whitehurst for that matter. Just not quite as much scoring possibility in Tennessee as there'll be in Atlanta. Even if one of these guys, Cobb or Sankey, ends up being sort of more of a bell cow than the other one, I still see those guys really just more as depth backs, guys you turn to maybe when the bye weeks start to hit in the middle of the season, but not nearly the ceiling that Coleman or Freeman will have in Atlanta.
All right, Michael, you're very active on Twitter at MBeller. How many trade advice tweets do you get a day during the season? People pitching trades to you and asking for, you know, validation or whatever.
I mean, I don't even bother trying to count. It's nonstop once the season starts, to be honest. And that's usually what it is. Looking for the best ones are the ones that the trade has already been made, and they just want to hear that it was a really good one rather than a
please tell me I didn't lose on my trade.
Yeah. How good did I do?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, nonstop.
Yeah, a couple of general draft strategy questions for you in a 12-team standard league. Are you waiting on a quarterback in a 12-team league?
Absolutely. Any one quarterback league, I'm going to wait on a quarterback. It's part of the reason why I think two quarterback leagues are a little more fun, and hopefully we'll start to catch on a little bit as the standard. But there's too much depth at the quarterback position to go after one early. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the NFL, in my opinion. Andrew Luck, phenomenal fantasy player. Both these guys deserve to be where they are in the quarterback rankings. They give you stability, like I talked about a little bit already. Stability at the quarterback position, that really is an asset in fantasy leagues. But what you give up by taking them, you're going to miss out on an elite group of wide receivers. You're going to miss out on the best running backs, and there's just too much depth. I mean, even if we reach down into the 8 to 12 range at quarterback, and we're talking Eli Manning, who threw for 4,400 yards and 30 touchdowns last year, and never had Odell Beckham and Victor Cruz on the field at the same time, or Cam Newton, who's had his worst rushing season as a pro, and he still had almost 600 yards and 5 touchdowns. Ryan Tannehill, just getting better and better as a quarterback, now has the best collection of weapons that he has ever had around him in Miami in his career. I think he's primed for another good season. Tony Romo, everyone loves to talk trash about Tony Romo. He's probably never going to live down that dropped hold against the Seahawks in the playoffs so many years ago, but all he does is churn out consistent top 10 fantasy seasons at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I'll take Aaron Rodgers in the third round. That's fine by me. Given that, do you consider quarterback the deepest position, or is there another position out there that's deeper?
Yeah, I think wide receiver is probably the deepest position, top to bottom and at the top, let's start at the top. I can reel off for you my top 10 receivers, and I mean, you're not going to find someone who you don't absolutely, I would say, love. Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown, Demaryius Thomas, Odell Beckham, Jordy Nelson, Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson. I'm talking about Calvin Johnson as a number 7 and A.J. Green as a number 8. So the elite group is super deep. And then go down into the 30s, and you know, you're looking at Brandon LaFell and Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith. All he does is give you top 25 seasons at wide receiver. Jeremy Maclin, yeah, he left Philly, but he is not Dwayne Bowe or Donnie Avery. He can have a very good season, I think, for the Chiefs. There's just so much depth at this position, so much depth in the elite group of receivers, that you should be able to piece together a good wide receiver core no matter how you attack the position. So I would say that's deeper. Quarterback starts to drop off after those guys. We start to get into the Phillip Rivers and Jay Cutler and Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, guys who are going to have their weeks, who you maybe deploy in the right matchup, but not someone who you can count on every single week as a starting quarterback.
You can follow him on Twitter at MBeller. Our guest today with Sports Illustrated's Michael Beller. Michael, thank you very much.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for having me.
And our thanks again to Michael Beller. Now we'll move on to the Daily Fantasy Sports, or DFS, portion of our podcast. We spoke with Evan Silva of Roto World last week, and I want to replay some of that because it was a really, really good interview. If you haven't had the chance, go ahead and download that podcast. It's definitely worth your time, Evan Silva. One of the best out there for fantasy analysis. But he talked about Vegas lines and how much they help. Here's what Evan had to say about that.
Oh, it's the starting point. It's the first thing that you look at. You know, you pull up the Vegas lines. You look at Philadelphia against Atlanta. You know, it's got a 54-point over-under. And that's a game that you're like, I want to have shares of players in a game like that. Now, early in the season, we're all kind of just working off of – we're all doing guesswork, including Vegas, and Vegas just gets more accurate with their over-unders and all that, those sorts of things over the course of the season. So there will definitely be some wild games in week one. Like, I remember last year, the friggin' Titans went to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
I remember that.
I can't even, I mean, I still think about that like all the time, and I'm like, I can't believe that happened. But wild things happen in week one, but you still want to definitely look at those Vegas lines and definitely use them as a critical data point for where to target players. Like in that game that I just mentioned, Atlanta-Philly, it's got the highest over-under of week one. I believe, I haven't looked at the over-unders in a couple days. But last time I checked, it did. And Jordan Matthews is only 6,000 on FanDuel. He should be priced like a wide receiver 1, and he's priced like a high-end wide receiver 3. So that's a major value opportunity. You know, the Eagles led the NFL in offensive plays last year. I expect Bradford to be an upgrade on Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles. Loving Jordan Matthews at that price. Well, I have actually listened to podcasts that the actual Vegas insiders have gone on, and the player props like they don't make any money off the player props. That's just to get people kind of in the fold. And they don't feel like they have great player props. So, you know, I don't know if we should use those as something, you know, as a decision-making tool, because I don't even think that the people that make them think that they are particularly great. Now, are they better props than you or I could make? Probably, but, you know, I don't know if that's a great decision-making tool. I like the Vegas over-unders better.
And I think he makes a great point about that being the starting point, because Vegas lines get released, what, Monday or Tuesday? That's where you start your DFS week. Arthur, how much do Vegas lines play a role in not only DFS, but in season long for you?
I think they're definitely a big help. If you look at what Vegas has historically done, I don't know how they do it, but they always seem to be right on the money. They're obviously looking for half of their bettors to be on one side of the bed and half of the guys to be on the other side of the bed. And it's just incredible. If you go back and look consistently each season at where their point spreads are and where the over-under lines are, I don't know how they do it. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not going there, but obviously they've got some guys who are pretty keyed into what's going on. So it can definitely be helpful. Obviously, if you see the high over-unders, those are games that you're going to target. I mean, obviously it coincides with if you have a pretty good knowledge of the league and you're keeping your finger on the pulse of what defenses are doing well and what injuries are prevalent and prominent, then you're going to have somewhat of an idea here. But yeah, you're looking for the high scores, of course, and I think there's definitely some value to keeping an eye on that, particularly in DFS, like you said. And season long, it's a little bit more tricky because you know, the lines are going to be a lot more accurate as you get closer to the games.
Yeah, and I completely agree with Evan that it is the starting point for my DFS team, and he also mentioned on the podcast that he's looking first for like value wide receivers. Those are the first guys that he's plugging into his lineup. So if you look for a high total and a low priced wide receiver in that matchup, I think that's a decent way to start your lineup.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think that's smart too, because obviously the receiver position, you need to find three of them. If you're going to target a stud with your WR1, you're going to spend typically to do so. So yeah, it's a good way to try and manage your budget a little bit. You're always going to have to spend on a running back, I believe, given the premium at the position and the lack of clear options. So absolutely, and I'm guessing that Evan probably also mentioned at some point how he loves to stack his wide receivers with a quarterback. That probably plays a little bit into his decision as well. It's something I'd also highly recommend.
Yeah, especially if you're in cash games, you can get those double points out of the touchdown from the quarterback to the wide receiver. Mm-hmm. That'll wrap it up for our podcast. Don't forget to get all of the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts, as listen to our podcast each week as we get you prepared for your drafts and help you win throughout the season. We'd also like to remind you that our podcast is available on iTunes, so please head over there and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Heavy duty demands have met their match with the high-strength steel Silverado HD. Drive what Dan Hampton drives and visit ChevyDriveChicago.com today. A big thanks to Arthur Arkish for our guest on today's show. Our producer today was Dan Mott. I'm John Solly. For all of us at Chicago Football, we hope you have a great week, and we will catch you next time.